The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
To the south of France, to paradise, to Simon Constable, writing for the Wall Street Journal and Barron's and other distinguished publications. But first, he lives in paradise, and the way to watch the progress this spring, there's been a great deal of rain in southern New England and a great deal of rain in southern France. But there's a plum tree outside Simon's window that tells us things are turning towards summertime, and ripening plums mean harvest can't be far away, maybe. Simon, a good day to you. Is the sun out, and what are the plums looking like? Good day.
Good day to you, John. The sun is definitely out at the moment. Our high today, 93 Fahrenheit. And when I got up this morning, it was 60 Fahrenheit. So really, really nice weather. Massively blue sky, no clouds, very little breeze. And so obviously lots of water needed to keep hydrated. And the Mirabel plum tree outside of the office here in the south of France is looking like it's going to be ready to be have its plums taken off it and made into jam. And I'm really looking forward to that. These are beautiful little plums that are bright yellow, and they should be absolutely tasty in a few days, I think, or maybe I just hope.
You and Juno were out for a walk on the lanes this morning. What are the climbing vines? Are they back on the fences? And then, what are the berries that you were eating last year? I don't remember.
The berries I was eating last autumn, which is in a few, starts a bit earlier here, in late August, they were blackberries or brambles, whatever you call them, depending on what colloquialism you use. But they are absolutely delightful, very full of vitamin C, absolutely delicious. We also saw a large snake today, enjoying the sun, and that was a bit scary because I certainly didn't want Juno to take on the snake, and so we just passed it by as fast as possible, and that was very interesting. We should be getting sweet chestnuts available from the trees again in a few weeks in August. Should be very, very nice.
Simon is in a country lane sort of environment, so if you come around the corner quickly and see a car pulled up in the middle of the road with the door open and an Englishman wandering in the vines, it's Simon. Wave to him. All right, Simon. We go from paradise, emphasis, to commodities. And the two I'm most interested in are copper, associated with worldwide growth, and oil, associated with worldwide pricing. What can you tell me about copper?
Copper is very interesting. It's worth remembering that copper is absolutely required for building residential blocks of flats, blocks of apartments, whatever you want to call it, or offices. You need that for the electricity going through the building. And you also need it to make cars, particularly electric vehicles. And so what we've got here is copper at $4.78 a pound, which is historically elevated, and that's up 4.7% on the year. What's happening now is that the smelters, these are the organizations and the basically the what's needed to take copper ore, which is then concentrated, and turn it into metal. Now, at the moment, there are so many smelters out there that the smelters are having to pay to have to do the process of smelting. And that's very interesting and very rare. We're on the edge of that actually happening. And it's a sign that there are too many smelters and some will have to be knocked down or mothballed for quite a while. It's a very interesting situation. China does need a lot of copper for its electric vehicles that it's making and for all those construction projects that they've got in mind. But other countries also need it. So America needs it. Europe needs it. Europe needs it really massively for defense and also for building new houses as well. And America does too. So there's going to be, I think, a lot of upside for the copper price.
And the price of oil has been declining since the winter. What is it doing now? Your Brent crude, we're West Texas. Your Brent crude is more important because it's the Eurasian price.
It is $68 a barrel, which is a little bit more expensive than West Texas Intermediate. It's down 18% over the last year, and part of that has been a slowing economy. What we've got here with oil is very interesting, is the price has gotten so low now that some drillers, particularly those doing horizontal hydraulic fracturing in the U.S., are finding it not profitable to do that drilling, so that they're pulling back on actually, you know, they don't want to lose money when they're drilling, so they're just stopping. And the headline at the Financial Times says U.S. oil output set for first annual drop since the pandemic. So that's 5 years ago. So that's a big deal, and that coming down, it may come down even more in price, which would be great for America. In Europe, we're less worried about it because we don't drive very far. And if we're going to go on a long distance thing, it will typically be on a train or something like that. It's pretty interesting.
Nonetheless, price of oil dropping, price of energy dropping would be helpful. But let's move from oil and copper to what we eat and what we want to eat. Cocoa for chocolate, oranges for orange juice, of course, very critical to American breakfast. And the price of coffee, which is everything in America. Any change year over year?
Year over year changes. So cocoa is coming down, and it's down 11% on the year. It's hovering just below $10,000 a metric ton. So that's 2,200 pounds or American pounds. So $9,387 per metric ton. That's a lot of money, and it would be much better if it was a lot lower, especially for me because I absolutely love eating chocolate. Orange juice is down 36% on the year at $2.79 a pound. Coffee, on the other hand, this is a bit eye-watering. It's at $3.55 per pound for Arabica coffee, and that's up 59% on the year. Yeah. And this seems to be not stopping, and that is, I think, going to give some people some headaches if they have to cut back, because when you cut back on coffee, that's what happens. And it's pretty interesting here. I think eventually coffee will get back to reasonable prices, but at the moment we're just not there.
Yeah, the excuse is that Brazil had a bad harvest last year. It's having a good one with the best stuff, the Robusta bean, this year. So there'll be lots of coffee available. The question is, will it go to Europe or will it go to China? I noted, because I don't know what it means, Starbucks is looking for a strategic partner. That means an investor in China. I wonder if they're anticipating that they need China's help in coffee because they're pricing themselves out in America. You know what they charge for a small cup of coffee with some goo in it. It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, and that seems to be happening worldwide. I mean, certainly I've been enjoying making coffee at home, and it's still expensive to buy in bulk. And I think that they may need to go off to China to, you know, get some more input for people who have a lot of money. And China is obviously a richer and richer country every year, it seems. We shall see what happens.
A Starbucks-like establishment in Kent that I go to right after church on Sunday, I asked for a small latte with skim milk, and it was $4.75. That's pricey, Simon.
that is pricey. I will make you a cup of coffee for nothing. You just have to be here, and I will pour it into your cup and offer you some milk if you wish some. So do not worry about that.
All right.
But that is pricey. Yes.
The price of energy is everything to Europe, and we need to attend to stories that are coming out of London so Simon can explain. The winter fuel subsidy, therein lies a tale. It turns out once upon a time, the Tory government that preceded the Labour government for 13 years saw fit to subsidize seniors in the wintertime with fuel subsidy so that they could pay their gas bills and electric bills to heat the house. The Labour came in and decided, well, we don't need to do this anymore. Labour said this, not the Tories. The Tories would have been branded as cruel to grandpa and grandma. So Labour said, we don't need to do this anymore. Suddenly there was a revolution in the back benches of Labour. So Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, reversed herself. Well, maybe a means testing. We'll do it a little bit. Now they're fighting over what a means test is and who's eligible and who's not. Meanwhile, you have the image of Keir Starmer standing next to huddled seniors with icicles from their noses, huddled around a little fire that is barely going. Simon, you grew up with a winter fuel subsidy, and you grew up with Labour's understanding of we have to share the wealth. It isn't working, Simon. Has something gone wrong with Labour?
I think something went wrong with Labour the moment they decided to cut the winter fuel allowance, which was when they first got into office. That was one of the first things that happened. And I thought that they're never going to be able to live this down. This seemed to be a minuscule amount of money for the British government. And they are never going to have not done that. So it's not one thing you can walk away from and say, hey, now they've drawn attention to the fact that they did it last year and reminded people that they've done something that most of the population thought was an absolute absurdity. So it is kind of comical in a way what happened. And I know they felt they were short of money, but this was a tiny amount of money in comparison to a lot of other things like running the NHS or boosting up defense spending and all the rest of it. And this was tiny in comparison. So I think they've really made a mess of this.
Detail here, Simon, because it's also part of the British quandary. I read your papers very carefully. You want to grow. Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer want to grow the economy. Therefore, they're raising taxes. Okay, I could deal with this. You know, some people think that way. But I read this morning that banks are extremely reluctant to extend loans to medium-sized companies. This is people making between 25 and 100 million pounds a year. Reluctant because they're seen as what? I don't know that part. Banks don't want to take risks in Britain, and you want to overtax your companies, you want to overtax the people. How do you grow out of that? You don't. And is it because I'm an American, I can see it and they can't?
I think that may be part of the problem. Certainly banks are very reluctant to lend money. And we in the UK and in most of Europe, there is nothing that's equivalent to Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is where you go in America if you've got a startup that's risky, but has some potential possibly. And even there, they get 1 in 10 companies to actually making it and making it into the big time. And that's great. And they make massive amounts of money from that one.
But you invest in all 10 because one's going to pay off. That's the way we think.
Yeah, that's the way you think in America, but that's not the way people think in the UK, and certainly not the banks. They're very much like, well, if you're making lots of money, we'll lend you some money, which is kind of like not when you need the money. It's when you need the money when you're starting off. What is very interesting here, though, is that as another factor is that there tends to be lack of ambition in the UK. So if you talk to a startup manager or CEO or something like that, and you say, how big do you think this company will grow? They might say, oh, it'll get to a billion. But if you're in America, the same type of person will say, oh, I think this has got the chance to be $100 billion worth of company, in that point. And the ambition is much bigger in America, and it tends to attract more investors to go into it. And that's just not happening in the UK. It's very much like, well, okay, we're a small country and we don't think that'll happen, and therefore we're not going to lend you any money. I think it's a big mistake, but there you go. That's what it is. It's a cultural issue.
We leave Grandma and Grandpa huddled by the stove, and we're heading to America, where there's a lesson here 95 years ago. Simon Constable, in the south of France, I'm John Batchelor.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.